The Security Committee has now started. Please be seated. I have an announcement to make. Agenda item 7, I'm pulling that item. So if you could do the roll call, please.
Chair McMichael?
Here.
Vice Chair Boylan?
Aye.
Regent Brager? Regent Brown?
Here.
Regent Carvalho?
Here.
Regent Downs?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. We'll move on to agenda item number 1, public comment. Any public comments in Elko?
There is no public comment in Elko.
Thank you. Is there public comment in Reno?
There's none in Reno.
Thank you. Public comment in Las Vegas? Seeing one. Thank you.
Hi, thank you. I am Amy Avaluna, Director of Culture Planning and Policy at Nevada State College. I have CPTSD, and when I do public speaking, it tends to show. Thank you for sticking with me. I'm here today to speak to you as the chair of the University Police Services Southern Command Public Safety Advisory Board, as we join together today for the Security Committee meeting. Now in its second year of operations, the UPD Public Safety Advisory Board, created by Director Garcia, which consists of representative student leaders, classified employees, administrative faculty, and academic faculty from each of the Southern institutions, I'm here to invite regents, leaders, chancellor, and staff to turn to the Public Safety Advisory Board for representative stakeholder input. Recently, the board's Identity, Diversity, Equity, and Access Council requested standing membership on the Public Safety Advisory Board. Strategic cross-representation increases outcomes that you value. The board's next meeting will be to consider this request and engage in additional revisions to the bylaws so that as we mature as a board, we continue to strategically align efforts and structure functional representation. I have an ask today, and that ask is that the Chancellor's Office work to assign an NSHE staff representative to join as a standing board member also. Direct NSHE involvement on the board will improve system-wide efficiency, ensuring compliance, and benefiting all. Today you'll hear more about consolidation that began in 2018, I believe. I've actually been at the consolidation table since it started in 2018. I was pleased to reflect today and to learn more about how that's gone. And most importantly, I want to commend Director Garcia, whose commitment to community policing and excellence have created safer, more inclusive campus connections to the police. Finally, I thank UPD for the data you will present today and advise that in future reporting, campus by campus per capita data will empower the next stages of maturity. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any other public comment from Las Vegas? Seeing none, we will move on to the chair's report. We'll move on to the minutes for possible action. Do I hear?
I will move to approve the minutes from the December meeting.
Regent Carvalho has.
I'll second.
And Regent Boylan has second. All those approve, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. We move on to the chair's report.
You can't vote.
Motion? Oh, any opposed to that vote? Hearing none. The motion passes. We move on to item three, chair's report. I have none. So we'll move on to agenda item four, NCHE Southern Command. That's Vice President, Public Safety and Director, University Police Services, Southern Command, Adam Garcia.
Good afternoon, Chair McMichael, Vice Chair Boylan, committee members, four wonderful presidents that I serve in the South, and Chancellor, members of the public. For the record, my name is Adam Garcia, Vice President, Public Safety Services, and Director of University Police Southern Command. I will be providing you an update on the status of Southern Command's activities for the calendar year 2022, as well as providing an annual overview of the 2022 annual security report with crime statistics covering the calendar years 2019, 2020, and 2021. This information has been forwarded by the department to the Department of Education as required by law. In calendar year 2022, University Police Services Dispatch handled nearly 49,000 calls. These calls were a 5% increase from 2021 and overall a 16% increase from 2020. The department responded to 13,319 calls with an average response time of 1 minute 10 seconds to 3 minutes 12 seconds, while within the national average. The department continued to see activity, the department continued to see increases in daily report activity with approximately 25% more reports filed throughout the four campuses that are served by the department. The department's Detective Bureau conducted follow-up on over 650 reports during this time. The dispatch center has hired two new public safety dispatchers who are currently undergoing on-the-job dispatch training. There's an additional recruitment currently taking place, so if you're interested, see me. In addition, consolidation of surveillance camera operations from the CSN campuses to central dispatch is still in progress. UPD is working with CSN, OTS, and facilities on a solution to complete this project. In addition, officers logged 7,127 foot patrol hours across all four campuses in 2022. So just to kind of recap, taking a totality, police services received approximately 49,000 telephone calls. That generated 13,000 calls to service, and that resulted in 1,800 reports for that period of time. Since my appointment in 2019, $3.8 million in grants have been applied for by the department. $2,094 has been awarded. Included in these awards our grant of $78,500 for portable vehicle barrier system that's now in use for special events. Police services have been granted additional funding to support an additional live scan fingerprinting system that will allow us to increase fingerprinting services to additional campuses we serve. The department has applied for and is awaiting notification of a grant program to the department that will assist us in providing our employees mental and physical health. More on this in just a moment. A $1.2 million grant that we received from the Department of Justice allowed us to establish a Region 6 de-escalation training center housed by University Police Services, and quite frankly, has provided some impressive results. Over 60 train-the-trainer certificates have been awarded to police departments throughout the United States. In the shadow of the various incidents across the country, the program offers training on best practices for de-escalation training. Those de-escalation techniques are used to stabilize, slow, or reduce the intensity of a potentially violent situation without using physical force or with a reduction in the use of force. This training method is used to refocus us, my profession, the police profession, back to the basics of being peace officers, and promotes a further commitment to community engagement using a community policing philosophy as the foundation. Last week, the United States Marshal for the District of Nevada, Gary Schofield, announced that all of his marshals throughout the state had received this training from University Police Services. In this statement, he said that his marshals attended the training to learn the latest methods and enhance operations of the marshals as they carry out their mission to protect the federal judicial family, conduct fugitive operations, locate missing children, and conduct detention operations. Nevada is known for innovation, and this program is another example of bringing best practices to the law enforcement profession. Close quotes. We have 9 additional trainings that are already scheduled throughout Nevada and California for 2023. In 2022, we hired 12 new police officers, 4 dispatchers, 3 administrative assistants, 1 training coordinator, 1 lieutenant, 1 sergeant, and an assistant director. I'd like to introduce one of Arnold Vasquez, who's kind of shy, standing in the corner over here. And for those of you who can go back that far, he does look kind of like Ponch from Chips. So I wanted to introduce Arnold Vasquez. Arnold came to us as a retired lieutenant from the Santa Cruz Police Department, and I think he's been doing wonders in what he's been assigned to do. So welcome to Assistant Director Vasquez. The department continues its aggressive push to fill additional vacancies of peace officers, dispatchers, and other support staff. In addition, the department is in the final stages of implementation of a community service officer program, which will add an additional layer of security services that can be provided at any NC institution in the South, but more specifically reduce the reliance on private and contracted security forces at CSN. These unarmed community service officers will be trained in best practices, strengthen community engagement, and be the eyes and the ears for the department. They will respond to non-confrontational calls to service, provide additional building, property, and perimeter patrols, and supply support services during events. And we have hired 2 individuals so far for this program. One is a supervisor of the program, and he came to us from San Francisco County Sheriff's Department. Edgar Manila, who's standing in the back as well in the lime shirt. So welcome to him, and he's got a big job putting together this program. As part of our efforts to retain part-time employees, I authorized the department to increase pay for all part-time employees who work for the department. Our department also continues our recruitment to build a diverse team representative of the communities that we serve. The department, our department, has a higher female representation than the national average, including its first assistant director, Jessica Moore, who's in the back here. Jessica came to us after almost two decades of service as a lieutenant at the University of Massachusetts. So she, again, has been doing wonderful things within those areas that are her under her command. And these people are the future leaders of the department. Currently, the department consists of 17% female in our department, which is well above the national average. The department also will be taking part in the 30 by 30 pledge, which pledges to develop and implement strategies and solutions to advance women in policing and to improve the representation and experiences of women in law enforcement. By signing this pledge, I agreed that we will take measures to increase representation of women in all ranks of law enforcement, ensure that policies and procedures are free of all bias, promote equitable hiring, retention, and promotion of women officers, and ensure that their culture is inclusive, respectful, supportive of all women in all ranks and roles in law enforcement. And finally, that the department will have 30% female officers by 2030. So that, therefore, the 30 by 30 project. As we continue to build this representative agency, literally and figuratively, I took the additional steps in 2022 to remodel our female locker room, to bring the number of female lockers from 11 to 25, building towards that future. The department continues to provide a plethora of training across Southern Command. What you see in the slide here is really a fraction of the outreach events that the department took part in. In addition to what you see here, I'm pleased to inform you that Lieutenant Roy Alexander will serve as the representative of the department and Southern Command, the four institutions in NSHE, on the Las Vegas Super Bowl Public Safety and Security Committee for the host committee for Super Bowl 58. The department will host national training for the Cleary Center at UNLV October 24th through October 26th. A little bit more on Cleary in a few slides. The department, in coordination with the Office of Organizational Resiliency, that includes UNR, WNC, Great Basin, and DRI North, and the Nevada Emergency Preparedness Summit is offering a four-hour NSHE-specific incident command system training and overview for executive leadership on Monday, March 20th at UNR. We are creating an additional training scheduled for Southern Nevada as well for those that can't travel to UNR sometime in the fourth quarter of this year. The department continues to host active assailant presentations multiple times throughout the year, with the goal of reaching as many folks, community members, as we can. These presentations offer awareness tips and tools should an active assailant situation arise. The last session that we had was held in the shadow of the Michigan State University shooting on February 15th, and at that training we had 184 community members from throughout the four institutions attend. Before I do move on to the next slide, I wanted to thank Amy Evaluna, who, as you know, chairs the Southern Command Police Advisory Board. She is tireless in her efforts at leading that board, and I just wanted to publicly thank her for that. The department continues to support law enforcement, the law enforcement community, through CSN's Southern Desert Regional Police Academy. As the lead agency, UPD has a lieutenant and an officer assigned full-time to the training academy, and we continue to build relationships with our peer partner agencies, along with Las Vegas Metro and the Nevada State Police. As you can see from the slide, there are a number of partners that we have, and that's continuing to grow as I speak. Thanks to the overwhelming support of President Zaragoza and Vice President McCoy, the Academy has now graduated three classes. The last graduation took place on January 5th, and as you can see from the slide, you may see some folks there that you know. Regent McMichael, Regent Perkins, UNLV Provost Chris Heavey attended the graduation, and as a matter of fact, Chancellor well, the chancellor, let me just leave it there. The chancellor was the guest speaker. He gave the commencement, and he provided the recruits with his guidance and his encouragement as they left the academy to patrol the streets of our communities. The department has applied for and is awaiting notification of a grant program to the department to assist us in employee mental health as well as physical health. Associated with that, and in order to complement the grant, the department is evaluating additional methods to provide improved mental, physical, emotional health, and wellness support to our personnel by working with our community partners. I've spoken to the new sheriff in Clark County. He's all on board, and he's actually leading the effort to provide, in particular, mental health wellness programs to departments as a region across southern Nevada. In addition, we have participated in local events and training, which have included free first responder workouts sponsored by the Independence Fund and the Veterans Justice Initiative. This initiative assists law enforcement agencies, first responders, and frontline workers to understand the nuances and true scope of veterans' mental health and their obstacles once they return from active service. In response to events across the nation, including Uvalde, Texas, and the most recently Michigan State University incident that I just referenced, the department has ordered upgraded equipment for critical incident responses, which includes rifle-rated ballistic shields, plates, mechanical breaching equipment, and training in mass casualty medical supplies for individuals, as well as patrol vehicle trauma kits with additional medical supplies for mass casualty response. As I discussed in an earlier slide included in the materials that you all received, you'll find the Cleary 2022 Annual Security Report. Because there are some new regions in are missed, I wanted to just take a minute to provide some context here. The Act was passed, the Cleary Act was passed in 1986 after the rape and murder of a freshman at Lehigh University. Her name was Jean Cleary. The event led to an increased attention on unreported crimes in college campuses across the country. In 1990, Congress enacted the Jean Cleary Disclosure of Campus Security Policy and Crime Statistics Act, known as the Cleary Act. The act has been amended five times since its enactment and includes increased safety and reporting measures, and most recently in 2013, the act requires colleges and universities to disclose information about certain crimes that occur on or near campus, and that's what you have in the report that was provided to you. This act applies to all colleges and universities that receive Title IV funding, and Title IV funding, as I think you know, pertains to student financial aid. The Cleary Act requires us to disseminate the annual security report that you have, or ASR, to employees and students by every October 1st. The ASR must include statistics of crime for the preceding calendar years, plus details about efforts taken to improve campus safety. In our report, you'll see there are 2020 to 2021 comparisons. You'll find increases in 12 of the 15 categories that we reported to the Department of Education under the Act. The information you see is the totality of Southern Command, UNLV, CSN, and Nevada State. DRI is not required to submit under Cleary because they do not receive Title IV federal funding. However, I think kind of what you're seeing here is you've seen a significant jump from one year to the other. The fact is that we can't compare these years because when you look at this, during the time when we had very decreased incidents was during COVID, so the campus was closed. So there was clearly an increase the following year. But if you compare 2021 to previous years prior to COVID, you're going to see that there's a huge decrease in 10 categories of crime reports that we have made. So as the department looks to the future, We are working on the introduction of a new predictive modeling program. This predictive policing model is a data modeling process that we are going to use as a hotspot for mapping to properly deploy personnel and resources. This is known, some of you may know, as surge staffing. In addition, the department will be best positioned to proactively discuss safety concerns with our students and others. The algorithms that are going to be created with this process will be based on past events with predictions on what we can expect to generally see. And I expect that this will be in use, I hope, within the next 60 days in Southern Command. So with that, that ends my presentation. I'm open to any questions you may have.
Any questions from the Regents? Yes, Regent.
Susan Breger, for the record. I just want to thank you. There was a incident on one of the campuses, and your officers were there within a minute and resolved it. It was someone that they knew that causes problems that they're aware of. And I just want to thank all the officers. Being a grandmother of two Metro officers, I can appreciate what they have to do and what comes about out there. So thank you.
Thank you.
Regent Del Collar.
Thank you, Chair McMichael. Last year, I think you came up before us to change, let's see, was it the qualifications? Oh, I know, it was the retired officers so they could come. And we did that. And so are you able to recruit? Is that helping? I don't think you mentioned that, so thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Adam Garcia, for the record. We have instituted this. We use it in our recruitment drive. We've reached out to a variety of different retired officers. We've gotten their retired list, I guess, so to speak, of different departments across the region. The fact is that most of these folks are retired, and this is kind of what we're hearing, right, is that they've retired and they really don't want to work midnight shift anymore or patrol duties. So we're having difficulty in filling positions under that program. We are, however, in the process of, there's one individual from a local department who has applied, who understands the program and understands the duties that are going to be required of him. And so I think we've gotten our first fish in the net, and I hope that we will have more in the future.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? I have one question. How are our four-legged police doing?
They're doing great. They're the most popular members of our department, and they go out every day. They were actually doing the sweep at Thomas and Mack for the basketball games that are taking place. We have, I think, 7 days of basketball kind of nonstop. So they're out there working hard today, and they're great. Just love them. Still looking for that fourth one that we hopefully will fill once we can fill some of the ranks of police officers.
Thank you very much for your presentation.
You're welcome.
Any other questions before he leaves? None? All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
How are we going to agenda item number 5, NSHE Northern Command information only. And Chief of Police, NSHE Northern Command, Eric James, please. Good afternoon.
I will turn it on anyway. I apologize if I yell into it. It's my fault. I didn't bring an entourage today. It's just me. Sorry. I drove all the way from Reno. God bless this state. But it's also nice to, you know, see no snow down here for the first time in, well, November. So it's nice to see no snow. So for the record, my name is Eric James. I'm the Chief of Police for the University Police Department, Northern Command. Good afternoon to everyone. I just want to give a quick update, kind of like Director Garcia did. You're going to see a lot of the exact same themes that are going on. I am not going to be presenting any type of Cleary information because that's already been sent out for you all to review a while back. So next slide. Who's running my slide over here? You running it? You running it? Oh, I get a clicker? Oh, my God, I get control. Oh, wow. All right. Hope this works. All right, so Kind of starting off on our grant program. So we received $733,000 from our year 2021 through July of 2022. Funding was used basically for traffic safety, perimeter security, underage drinking enforcement equipment, and salary support. WNC and Team CC actually received a majority of this to update the remote and automated locking systems because they are out of kind of regulations what we use down at the university. But also, they just need to be replaced. They're old. And so we used quite a lot of money to do that. What we received actually for the department was $2,500 for more tourniquets. And so, you know, we have our robust actual trauma kits in every car. Every officer carries trauma kits with them. They carry tourniquets with them. But we received even more funding for those tourniquets. So we got about 65 more tourniquets that we're now able to use. $21,250 to start replacing our body cameras. If you can see, I got one of our new Axon 3 body cameras right now. And that's a five-year program. Body cameras, cheap. Storage, holy cow. There's a lot of storage for money. So this is a five-year contract that ends out about $107,000, and it's really about the storage and some replacements. So, and then lastly is $80,000 for a virtual reality system, which I'm like super excited about because it'll give an opportunity for us to interact with our community and have them come in and run scenarios in a virtual reality world that they can kind of see what it's like to interact with people. So we don't have to take them out and do a simunition training. We don't have to take them anywhere. We can set it up in any room. And so we're really excited about this as an opportunity, yes, for the officers to train, but I think more so I'm more excited to get the community in there to see what is it like for the officers to do their job every single day. So I was part of our department initiatives as I was able to speak at the National COPS Conference, which is the Concerned Organization for Police Survivors, and I got to speak about department culture. And we had just a great turnout, and I've actually got a few more chiefs of police that want to say, hey, can you come talk to our people too? And I said, sure, absolutely. We are partnering with the FBI Northern Nevada Child Exploitation Human Trafficking Task Force, and there's going to be a little bit more on that in the future. Our Power Engage feedback tool, and you can kind of read on the board probably what you got in front of you as well. What this does is every single time, so when I go unlock Vic's door when he locks himself out, he gets a message that says, hey, how did he do? And you can rate it from 1 to 5. And so what they do is they, on their phone, they hit a 5, and it says, hey, do you want to give any feedback? This is all the feedback we've gotten. Anyone want to take a stab on how much negative feedback we've gotten? I'll help you. 0. That's how many. And the one person that gave us a 1 said, oops, I'm sorry, I didn't read the instructions. I meant 5. So we're getting about a 43% response rate, which is pretty good. And this is your bread and butter. This is going out, and it's people that we're assisting every single day that are giving us feedback by officer, by name, and what they're doing. It's just phenomenal. Again, we talked about that virtual reality system. And then last, as part of what we're doing is also with some of our enhanced less lethal tools. I'm a belt here. I'm carrying what they call the Bolo Wrap. It's a less lethal tool in which a 7.5-foot Teflon line is deployed at an individual to kind of wrap the leg or wrap the arm. And what it's used for is to de-escalate a situation. Someone utilizes this. It traps their arms for a second, traps their legs for a second. They're not able to move. And officers are able to engage with the individuals without really going hands-on. They're able just to, because the person just kind of gets stunned, like, what just happened to me? And boom, we're able to go hands-on a little bit easier. So some of our department initiatives, right, organization, mental and physical health and wellness. I know Director Garcia mentioned this as well. For about 18 months, we have been paying for gym memberships to any NCHI institution that has a gym. And I allow the officers to take an hour of their shift and go work out, because I think if we can't take care of our officers while they're in the station, they're not going to take care of our community out there. And so I'm a little deceptive. I'm not going to lie. It's sneaky. I'm not paying for you to go work out of town, but I'll pay for you to work out at an institution because, one, you're going to get fit. Two, you're also interacting with our community. And we have found that that has gone so far for us to allow relationships to be built that, honestly, I think no one ever thought it was going to be built. So it's really, really encouraging. We continue to use surveys to elicit ideas and morale and participation. We continually do supervisor leadership training. We just recently partnered with the Big Brothers, Big Sisters of Northern Nevada, and we're starting a program up there along with Washoe County. It's called the Bigs with Badges. What happens is an individual gets a little what they would call from a low-income, generally speaking, single-parent household, and then they go out and do community events every month. And what we've seen is a 100% graduation rate. So we're starting always talking about what do we do. Every time the officers show up, people want to know, what are you going to do? I'm more of a, I want to go to the backside of it, right? I want to get outside the matrix and say, what can we do right now that that individual that we're helping with the Big Brothers, Big Sisters won't end up in that juvenile system and then we won't see later. So we got about four or five people doing this. And then throughout Northern Nevada, other agencies are hopping on board as well, which is really encouraging. Part of our human trafficking, we had two ops that we ran. We partnered with the regional law enforcement agencies. We conducted two-day operations focused on the reduction of human trafficking. Just so you understand, human trafficking is anywhere from the age, what we're looking at is 14 and up. And so the very first one that we did, we had a total of 28 arrests and 13 felony arrests in 2 days. The FBI said that they've never run an operation so successful. Then we did one in December. We got 19 arrests and 8 felony arrests. And so when we're rolling through these, we are the individuals who are working these specifically, it's targeting around young females who are attending the university. So that's, to me, this is probably one of the greatest untold stories that I think we need to be investigating more when we start talking about our young ladies at the universities. So we have not only completed our campus security program, but now every campus in Northern Nevada has our CSOs at every single campus, which is awesome because these people are just absolutely amazing. There's Fran, Jose, and Ray. Actually, the young man with the sunglasses, right-hand side, center of your screen, we're also using it as a pipeline. He's actually right now in the academy to become a peace officer. And so we're sort of using it as a pipeline to get him in. So they are just, again, phenomenal. So some of our other community initiatives, we attended many student group meetings. So I go to and I meet with the presidents of GSA. I meet with the presidents of the ASUN. We've been down to TMCC and UNR and WNC to meet with all these student organizations. In fact, one of our sergeants recently just got a T-shirt. And it's not really what it's on the T-shirt. It's about the fact that the students knew his birthday and gave him a T-shirt. I just thought that was amazing. It was so cool. We hosted a women's self-defense class through our Girls on Guard program that we've been doing, and I know South has been doing well, but we had people from the South come to the North, and now we have 8 instructors, which is fantastic because it's just been me and someone else for a long time. I would like a little of my time back, too. So now we have 8. Now they can go out, and that's probably one of our most popular programs. We've also taken it a step further, not just for the Girls on Guard side, but we started doing what we call a blended self-defense, which is men and women together in the same room. Officers held an ice cream social. We were down at the Meadowood Mall for TMCC, handmade ice cream sandwiches, delicious. I probably had too many. And then over at the USR's main campus, we're giving out ice cream. We have carts, and you can see there's Madison down there and some of our other officers. And then lastly, we now have a member of the command staff, Lieutenant John Galicia, pictured on the right hand of your screen in the center, where he was appointed to the co-chair of the TMCC Faculty of Color Coalition. So doing a lot of great things up at TMCC as well. So our staff continues to do workplace violence and workplace safety, active assailant. In fact, the reason I drove down here is because tomorrow I'm going to go to a couple of our properties for UNR, and actually do some active assailant training with them. They requested it, so I thought I'll be down here, so I might as well knock it out. We've been doing probably 2 or 3 a week of these, going into different divisions and actually presenting this training to them. And it's great training, and it's like the old adage, right? You hope it doesn't happen, but now you're prepared for it. So we continue to do these things, though. Executive staff sits on diversity subcommittee. I sit on that, along with our equity and inclusion subcommittee. We continue to instruct over at the fitness center, PEX classes, drop-in classes. And so we have one individual who teaches a rape aggression defense class, and that's a 1-credit class. We do 2 Girls on Guard drop-in classes a week, and I teach CrossFit at 6:30 a.m. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And it's I can't tell you how many – no kidding, we're getting 12 to 20 students coming in at 6:30 a.m. to work out, which if you've ever tried to get a college student out of bed at 6:30 a.m., it's pretty hard. So what else do we do? There's the dogs. That's right. We even made trading cards. I knew I was going to get asked, so I thought I'd put it in there. So we've been doing a lot of orientation and a lot of partnering, and I'm going to tell you why that's happening here in a couple of slides. We continue to do our socials with Coffee with a Cop, ice cream handouts, pack provisions. Great program that the UNR runs, along with others that we're able to donate supplies to those students that need those supplies. We've also updated our website to really look for that engagement for our community. And then we actually started a class called UPD 101, which is click on the class and follow it. This is what we do. This is how we handle things. Here's our calls for service. So it starts to educate our students, faculty, and staff. K9 trading cards, press banners, and then recruitment material as well. We also have started making some different safety swag. So we have nightcaps. These are little devices that go right over the top of your drink, and you can put your straw in it. So if you're out at a party, you put this thing over, no one can stuff anything in your drink. They're really popular, whistles and safety cards as well. We also created a rideshare zone at UNR, TMCC, and WNC, and it's called What's My Name? And so what happened was a young lady was kidnapped. She thought that she was getting into a car that was an Uber in South Carolina in 2018. It wasn't. She was kidnapped and murdered. So her family has turned this into a nonprofit, and they go to all these different law enforcement style events. So while we were there, this guy comes over and starts talking to us. And, you know, you're at these conferences, and a lot of times people are trying to sell you stuff. That's what they do. And so you're like, oh, geez. And then in about 10 minutes, I was like, oh, my gosh, is it getting dusty in here, or is it just me? His story just sat. I have a daughter, right? I know what it's like to care so much about your loved ones. And so we started putting up signs. And what these signs tell is, boom, 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 four things that you need to do when you're Uber or your Lyft or your rideshare service shows up. Here are the four things that you need to do and they need to do back. They will give you all the material for free. They take care of all the printing, all the signs. All you got to do is find space. We can do that. That's an easy one. Part of our recruitment efforts are cards for the officers, grab bags, working with our journalism school to produce a recruitment video. We also are taking part in that 30 by 30 for women in policing. So 30% of our force by 2030 will be women. And then lastly is a new thing that we're doing. It was through a grant. It's police to peace officer promise. And what this is, if you look throughout the Nevada revised statute, you're going to see peace officer, right? You're not going to see police officer or law enforcement. And so we want to, it's not so much saying that we're not police. It's simply going back to a traditional peace officer. And so what we're doing is we're getting some new, signage made up for our backs that we when we wear our vest that says peace officer, not police officer. Changes nothing. It's just simply saying this is the way it was. I don't know what happened. I don't know which direction it went, but we're peace officers. That's our, you know, one of the things that we always do is keep the peace, maintain the peace. That's what we do. And so we're working with this grant. They're coming in to do training for us. We just got done doing a big survey with them. So really looking forward to results of that as well. So I have been asked, Dr. Amanda Wins is a phenomenal member of our team. She's sort of separate, but sits in the same space that we have. And so what she's doing as part of her organizational resiliency team is amazing. They conducted a UNR spring tabletop exercise, student services training, focused on the first 30 seconds of crisis. They've been going through and doing what's called, now I'm going to draw a blank on what she's doing, prepared, not scared. And so she sends out these emails to get people to join, and within 20 minutes, these classes of 25 people are filling up. It's phenomenal. It's a really great program. She consolidated with Black Swan and the Upathia contract for Northern Nevada, which adds the capabilities. So Black Swan is if there's an emergency, this company will step in and handle all of your calls that are coming in to your university or to your college, because there's no way. What we saw in Argenta was there's no way we could handle that kind of volume. We just can't. And so what this company does is here's your script, go, and they start answering calls for you. And so she was able to consolidate that through Northern Nevada. Great Basin College became a signatory to the National Intercollegiate Mutual Aid Agreement, a national mutual aid documents, aid/request assistance in emergencies. Conducted site surveys. I got the pleasure of driving with her and her team all over this great state of ours, from Elko to Winnemucca, all the way down to Ely, and all the way back again. And she did a site survey at every single place we went to. It was just a great chance to get out and see what we have out there as far as, you know, we always talk about the rules. And it's like no one wants to talk about the rules. Well, I got to tell you, that's our bread and butter is the rules. And so we really try to work hard to make sure that they feel like the same amount of policing, the same amount of love that we give everyone else, that they get the exact same thing. She conducted a site survey. Can we talk about that? Then she attended the 2020 FEMA Higher Education Symposium. She is either coming or going pretty consistently when she's teaching at these things. She conducted a spring tabletop focused on emergency comms at Great Basin, which was a really well laid out presentation. And then presented the Marriage and Collegiate Health Association, the National Conference on the Importance of a Relationship Between Emergency Management and Healthcare. So a little bit of a continuing is participating in a four-day integrated community training, the FEMA Emergency Management Institute in Maryland with Washoe County. And you can see also the cities of Reno, Sparks, REMSA, the University of Nevada, Reno, Nevada Energy, Red Cross, Washoe County School District, Pyramid Lake Paiute Tribe, and the Reno Tahoe Airport. She's actually going to be helping out the Reno Tahoe Airport on a full-scale exercise in April or May. And so we're actually going to provide some people to get all moulanged up like they just had a big plane crash and let them do their work. Presented research on emergency management accreditation at the Nevada Preparedness Summit, and then was appointed to the State Emergency Response Commission. So Amanda and her team are phenomenal. It's go, go, go nonstop for them, a great asset. And so some of our highlights that we had, Madison Effort joined us recently and created a position. She's our specialist community outreach and service support. And I can tell you, she does such an amazing job. The things that you saw on this page is not coming from this brain. It's coming from her. She has her pulse on what is going on in the world, and she knows what students, faculty, and staff are looking for. She is phenomenal. She's also our first non-SORN women's self-defense instructor, which is great. Officer Nate Stevens, he rejoined our team after a student cadet. He took a hiatus, and he came back. Boom. He's now a peace officer, and he's just doing phenomenal work. Kelly Nadiver, our threat assessment individual, she recently passed the Association of Threat Assessment Professionals Certified Threat Manager Examination, and it only has an 18% pass rate the first time, and she was able to pass it. And just, again, I lean on her a lot. Three Nevada, NNLEA, that's the Northern Nevada Law Enforcement Academy graduates, and one transfer actually from Metro came up and has now joined the team as of November of 22. And then we had some promotions, Detective Seifert, who is on our heat team, and then Sergeant Dave Olson, and then our finance, Kathy Clark-McDonald, went from up to NC Specialist too. So super happy about that. That's right, we couldn't go a slide without getting all the dogs in there. So that's all I have.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your presentation. Any questions from our regents? Regent Borland.
Thank you, Chair. Commend you on your training that you're doing for women and the girls. It's something I've done a lot in my life, but I think that's a great thing because we forget to tell them something like, what's my name? That's an awesome one. The second thing was, because you mentioned it about the body cameras, have you thought about, I don't know how you would, but the cameras that you carry on the shoulders? Because the body cameras, if you present your weapon very often, whether it's a weaver stance or whatever, it's going to cover you. So you don't get the whole picture, right? So what about those?
Not necessarily. So today, Eric James, so in today's world, the coverage here is about 120 degrees. And we have to remember, what we're really looking for is the events that led up to that, not so much the shooting itself, right? The shooting itself is super important. But what we want to know is, why did this take place? And so a lot of times you have to remember, too, is that you don't just have one perspective. You have two and three perspectives because there's more than one officer there, generally speaking.
So, no, I get that. But why not the shoulder cameras over the body cameras? That's my main...
They don't really make shoulder cameras anymore. Axon started to. They actually had one that went on your glasses.
Right.
And then they realized quickly those just get ripped off your face when you get in a fight. So they quit making those. They've gone to the use, so it's a pretty well done system. But also, a lot of them are attaching them to their belts, and they're still getting the same view as out there. Yeah.
Yeah, the belt sounds more okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. You're
that.
Welcome.
Yep.
Yes, Regent Perkins.
Thank you. The virtual reality, can we do that?
Eric James, for the record, I would gladly drive anywhere to set it up so you could do it. Yes.
I'll come to you.
Okay.
Thank you.
And the great thing is it's coming with everything. So taser, rifle, gun, it comes with everything.
Ooh, taser, my favorite.
Yeah.
Yes, and any other questions? Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Chair McMichael. Just a really great report, very comprehensive. I can see you're passionate about your job, and sounds like you're a great boss to work for. And I would just say, the term peace officer rather than police, words matter.
Absolutely. Yes, ma'am, they do. Absolutely,
they do. So thank you for doing that.
You're
changing the culture, and I think you talked quite a bit about that.
We're giving it our shot.
You did at the national training. So.
Yes, ma'am, thank you.
Very nice.
Thank you very much. No other questions? All right, thank you.
Thank you all for your time.
We will move to agenda item number 6, NSHE Cybersecurity, and this is information only. Dr. Anna Malkovich, Chief Information Officer, Security Systems Computing Services, and Thomas Dobert, Chief Information Security Officer, will present an update on cybersecurity at the NSHE, including current industry trends, NSHE-specific challenges, and preventative measures and opportunities. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Ann Milkovich, for the record, NSHE CIO. And I am here just to introduce Thomas Dobert, who is our new CISO, which stands for Chief Information Security Officer. He's been with SCS for about a year. After over 20 years of experience within NSHE, he comes to us from TMCC, where he was previously CIO there. So I'll turn it over to him to give an update on cybersecurity. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne, for the kind introduction. One warning up front, no guns, no cameras, no dogs, unfortunately. So for some of you, I will try to squeeze all my knowledge over 20-something years into 10 minutes. All right. Okay, current trends. We are still dealing with malware, ransomware, distributed denial-of-service attacks, or DDoS attacks, and phishing attempts. And I also would like to add artificial intelligence into this mix, but I will talk about that a little later. So malware. I found an interesting statistic from the Microsoft Security Intelligence website, and of course they only keep track of Microsoft devices, and they are saying that 80% of all the malware that's being downloaded, not by willfully, of course, but 80% are being downloaded by the educational sector. And this includes higher education and K-12, of course. That's a huge number. The next topic, of course, is still ransomware. It's still one of the biggest concerns that we have, not just because of the monetary loss, the research data loss, or PII exposure, public information exposure for our students and faculty, but it's also reputational loss. But there's a tendency for fewer and fewer companies to actually pay the ransom because they are better prepared for such an event. They understand that payment does not necessarily mean you get your data back at the right time. And there's also a foundational belief that cybercrime should not be rewarded with money, of course, right? And then the federal government also put laws and regulations in place, and that's done by the Office of Foreign Assets and Controls, and they impose sanctions that certain countries or certain individuals may not be paid. So therefore, the methods have shifted a little bit. So if I would be a cyber criminal, at first I would encrypt your data and hope to get paid. These days, I will break in first, I steal your data, make a copy it on it on my server, and then I encrypt your data, and then I hope you pay me. And if you don't pay me, well, then I sell your data to the highest bidder, or I just make it publicly available. And we essentially do not want to be in the news for something like that, like other companies have been, right? So we do whatever we can. So now let me go to phishing and AI. We all know what a phishing attempt is. But if you pair phishing with artificial intelligence, you get something that's pretty much English perfect, if you will, because earlier on, phishing attempts could be easily seen by bad grammar, by spelling mistakes. These days, I can create a phishing email in any language, and it's nearly perfect. And since all of our information is public knowledge, meaning our names, titles, emails are on our websites, all it takes is a creative person to actually come up with something. And in my experience, I can tell you every year there will be somebody that buys gift cards for the president. You get my drift, right? Yes. Thank you. SCS always takes gift cards, by the way, so whenever you feel like it. So NC-specific challenges in my short time in this position, I want to start out with good news, and we are covered for cyber liability insurance for the whole system, meaning all the institutions are covered under this insurance now. And the Office of Risk Management has done an awesome job to get everything together, all the institutions, all the security, the insurance underwriters. So it was a very good meeting. I was really impressed by all the institutions. Another challenge that I would like to see solved is multi-factor authentication, including for our students as well, meaning before I can access PeopleSoft, I have to receive a code on my phone and then type this code into PeopleSoft so I can actually access it. And this is also being asked for by the insurance underwriters. Yeah, so we are working on that. The next one is just an observation and a statement. We have huge staffing challenges in the IT departments. It's very difficult to find qualified individuals. You're probably aware of that, so I just want to point that out. And the last suggestion I have in this topic is a privacy or data privacy officer. So there are many, many new regulations coming out where states or even the European Union, you are probably aware of the GDPR, require institutions or companies to have a complete control over the privacy or the data that they are keeping. And I think ENGIE would be served by having a data privacy officer. So Anne and I were discussing this already, and we will continue talking about this. So what are we doing to keep us safe? Well, ENGIE firewalls are blocking 35 million probing, scanning, and intrusion attempts per day. 35 million per day. And that is the average that was taken over 1 year. Of course, most of those are automated attacks. Those are not necessarily people, but they are anomalous attacks. SCS also runs an appliance that actually is looking for distributed denial of service attacks. And as soon as this appliance discovers something, we get texted and the institution gets texted as well, so we can take care of this attack. We engage in threat intelligence sharing. We have what's called the ENGIE Threat Bulletin. So whenever my office sees something interesting, something that might be applicable to the institutions, we send it out to everybody. And I always hope that all the institutions are actually reading it as well. But I do get responses back most of the time. And yes, so the Board of Regents policies, guidelines, and procedures. In my opinion, when it comes to cybersecurity, they are a little outdated maybe. And maybe we can work on that a little bit and bring them up to 2023. And the reason I say this is because a lot of institutions already have a policy on the books that employees have to take cyber liability training, but our policies do not reflect that. Okay. And the last one, when I started out, I talked about malware and ransomware. Well, these are all actions that can only happen if people react to it. So, and that's why I'm a big proponent of cybersecurity awareness training. And every institution does training in one way or another, but I think it would be very beneficial for us to have one training platform that's being used by all institutions. So we all know what kind of training is provided, and hopefully it saves some money to the institutions, and that those institutions that currently cannot afford a certain platform can also benefit from that. So in summary, system computing services and the local IT departments do a lot of work behind the scenes that we are not aware of to keep us safe. I see opportunities to update the board policies and maybe hiring a privacy officer, and then, of course, the cybersecurity awareness training that I just mentioned. And with that, I give it back to Anne.
Thank you, Thomas, for compiling that information, and Milkovich again for the record. And I would just like to reiterate the importance of security awareness training. It seems not useful to a lot of people, but what it does and what I advocate for is to do short training frequently. So like 5 minutes per month is all it would take, because it breaks the muscle memory cycle. We get so used to get an email, click, email, click, email, click, that we'll click on a link unintentionally because just out of the muscle memory. But if people take security awareness training frequently, it helps to break that cycle. And taking 2 hours of security awareness training once a year is not helpful, but 5 minutes per month is. And as you know, in higher ed, it is hard to enforce mandates on faculty, students, and even staff. And so that's where it becomes difficult and where policy can really help with that by requiring it that it is required and that it is enforced. And also just looking at the policy again, the security of policy has not been looked at for many years. So I think there's an opportunity there. And thank you for this time, and we'll take questions.
Thank you very much. Do we have any questions?
Yes, sir.
Yes, Regent Borland.
These trainings, could you set up something where, would the training be, hey, it's 9 o'clock in the morning and you've got a 5 minute training? Or is it, bang, we just shut everything down, nobody can do anything, you've got to go through this for 5 minutes? How would you do it? Do you see what I'm saying? Give me the steps. I'm a
sure,
man.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you very much for that question, Ann
yes,
Milkovich,
ma'am.
For the record. So the way it works right now and the way we would recommend is at the beginning of the month, an email notice is sent out. Your monthly security awareness training is ready. Please complete it as soon as possible. The software tracks who completes it and who doesn't. And so then we have a scheduled reminder at about, I think, 10 days at the point. Yes, 10 days, 2 weeks, that says, hey, you haven't completed your security awareness training, and it's another reminder. Now, the way we do it inside SCS is we're looking at the list of who has not completed, and then I email the supervisor and say, not liking this, we need to complete this, we need to be really on this, so please make sure everybody's completing it. And that's how we do it, and that's how some of the institutions do it. But for example, it's not being offered to the regents. We think that would be a really good thing to offer it to the regents. It's not mandated across SA. It's mandated across some institutions, but not all. So if there was a policy, it would help those institutions not be the bad guys, because a lot of people, I don't want to take security training. That's boring. It's stupid. I don't have time. It's like, it's 5 minutes. It's kind of entertaining, and take a break and learn something. Even though I'm in this industry for years, I learn things when I take the training, and I kind of like it. But it's 5 minutes, sometimes 10. But that's how we enforce it.
One more question, sir. So if someone's, after repeatedly being told not to do it, because I'm very much in favor of cybersecurity and everything else, I love it, then what do? Do you just shut them down and say, hey, you're not getting on your computer till
you take
do this
it
5 minutes? All right. I mean, remind them with a kiss or something. Hey, yeah, do this now.
Is anybody doing that?
Yes.
Yeah, Thomas.
Something like that. A punch, but a nice.
Thomas Stoward, for the record. There's one institution that actually disables the person's account. Yes. Which is tough, but it is what it
you,
is.
You said you just closed their account.
My understanding is that if they have not taken the training after several reminders,
right,
their NetID will be disabled until they take the training.
Okay, I like that.
Regent DiCarlo.
Thank you, Chair McMichael. I have a comment and a question first. We have 19, you said there was 19 openings for cybersecurity people within ENCHI. Is that what you said? No? That's not what you said. Okay. Then I wrote it down wrong, because I was just going to mention that I know there's a really robust cybersecurity program here at CSN. And are you guys, when you need openings, do you come looking for students?
Thomas Stoward, for the record. So yes, we have discussed this internally, and we have two openings coming up pretty soon. But for students, it would be more like an internship at this point, I would think. But we are not quite there yet until we are staffed completely. We were discussing an internship in cybersecurity for students, but we are not quite there yet.
That would be great. So thank you, Thomas, and welcome too. And my last one would be, you mentioned wanting to hire a data privacy officer?
Yes.
And so why are you recommending that? And I'm not an IT person at all. So kind of what's the scope of that person's job? And we're not covering it now? I don't know.
Yeah, Thomas Dawood for the record. So it started with the GDPR, which is a regulation in Europe where institutions and companies that do business with European citizens have to keep track of those people and their data. So let me give you an example. I'm a prime example, actually. I'm a dual citizen. I'm American and I'm German. When I retire in 50 years and I go back to Germany and I tell Anne, you need to forget about me completely. Can she do that? At this point, probably not. A privacy officer would keep track of where all my data is stashed away. Mm. Right? And we have to be aware of this because we have European students at the institutions, and all it takes is one case where somebody says, hey, I'm done here, I'm going back, I want you to forget everything about me. There are many details to be worked out, like the grades have to be somewhere, right? The degree has to be somewhere. So we don't know exactly how this will work, but it will come. And we might as well get in front of this train instead of being surprised by it. And then California has a privacy regulation, a lot of other states already as well. And for me or for any IT director on campus, this would be too much, to be honest.
Okay, thank you very much.
Any other questions? I have one question. At the end of the day, when you go out the door and lock it, what happens during the period of time between, let's say, 5 o'clock and 9 o'clock in the morning? Is there an AI that's watching over cyber security and identifying attacks?
Thomas Dawood for the record. So some institutions have implemented a SOC, a Security Operations Center, which is usually outsourced to other parties. And then this third party is watching over the systems. It makes sense for large institutions that also have students. For SCS, for example, we had the discussion. I had a discussion with Gardner about that. With the number of our employees, I am not convinced that this is something we need to do. However, there are measures on the network side in place, like this DDoS appliance that is looking out for potential problems on the network.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much for your presentation. All right, we'll move on to agenda item number 8, new business. Is there any new business? Yes, Regent Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. About the security policy that was mentioned, maybe we might want to look into that. Concerning yes. The training and the policy itself.
All right, thank you. Regent Brown.
Thank you, Regent Brown, for the record. To echo what Regent Perkins said, I had written down, you know, putting on just for future agendas, and I believe we only meet 2 times a year, so maybe having an interim if this is as dire and important as our team says, but adding a policy for mandatory security training across all ENCHI institutions, and then looking into this GDPR person that'll match and just see if it is something that we need in our system.
Thank you. Do we have any more new business? All right, then we'll move on to agenda item 9, public comment. Any public comment in ELCO?
There is no public comment in ELCO.
Thank you. Any public comment in Reno?
There's none in Reno.
Thank you. Any public comment in Las Vegas? Seeing none, and I will conclude this security committee. Thank you.